country with Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler's had a busy career, starting out with the hugely successful rock band Dire Straits. He has branched out to producing other artists, composing film scores, and playing guitar for the likes of Bob Dylan, George Jones, and Randy Newman. Mark also recorded duet albums with Chet Atkins and Emmylou Harris. Also, Jonathan Trawick from the swing band Well Swung will be in the studio to play live. So tune in to KBOO Saturday morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. as we take a trip to the country with Mark Knopfler and Jonathan Trawick.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and jobs crisis Saturday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Joe Uline is a labor leader who will discuss the urgency and the climate crisis and the response that must be made in carbon neutral work, education, and more. Again, that's an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and job crisis Saturday, October 10th, 6:30 p.m. at the AFL-CIO Hall at 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Time is 11 a.m. Coming up next, Rabia Yemen hosts The Digital Divide. So keep it locked right here on your community radio.
Co-founder, CEOs of Selly, which is, I don't want to know how to describe it. I want to call it an app, but it's not an app. It's more like an environment. So Russell, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. Well, help me explain to the audience what Selly is.
Okay, well, we can start with the name. So Selly is short for cell phone, and really my co-founder and I really believe very passionately about the power of mobile phones, about cell phones. So you'll sometimes hear people say, hit me up on my Selly. So the vision behind Selly is really to create social networks for social change, and that really can span learning organizations from K-12 schools, universities, activism groups, which we're very proud of, and also just teams or families, just social use cases too. So,
well, tell us more. I mean, you know what a social network is.
Yes.
And I think we all of our listeners understand what social change means. But explain what a social network is in the context of your technology.
Okay, well, we do really, social network is basically group communication. And so being able to very quickly assemble people to mobilize them, whether it's at a rally or maybe a long-term environment like a classroom or an entire school district, it's about really allowing them to communicate in a real-time fashion and then to get people within that network to collaborate, to what we call learn together. Hashtag learn together is really our sort of our anthem as a company. And so we really believe that people who learn together change the world. And so it's about sharing. It is really about cultivating real-time transparent environment for authentic communication, collaboration. And then the third thing that really powers a community or a social network is really funding, so crowdfunding. So we like to think of it as three C's. We do communication, collaboration, and we very recently introduced crowdfunding. So you can have a group and you can use it to externally communicate with them. Internally, they can collaborate. And then from a bootstrapping viewpoint, they can build capacity through crowdfunding, much like Kickstarter for schools or Indiegogo, that kind of thing.
Okay. So, but you don't have to have a cell phone to use Celly.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the key aspects of our service, and really one of the a key differentiator, is that we are cross-platform, meaning that we allow you to use a SMS text messaging feature phone. You can use the latest smartphone. You can use an iPad. You can use just a web browser.
So you could use a regular computer.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then you can even just use email access if you want to. So part of our, really, we work a lot across demographics. And when you go into, let's say, a school district, it's important that all stakeholders, the kids might have one-to-one tablet devices, but the parents might not. And so the parents might just have a feature phone. They might not even have a data plan.
Right.
And so being able to engage everybody with a cross-platform, a tool, a service that works across devices, the device that's already in your pocket or that you already have. So it's essential. That kind of 100% inclusion is very important because narrowing the digital divide is one of our our goals as a company.
Because, you know, we're not giving him a dollar for every time he says digital divide, but we love it when guests say the name of the program.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So share with us. So how have people or groups, like who's using Celly? Let's just go who's
okay,
there.
Okay. So we have over a million users and
just in Oregon?
No, throughout the country, really the world.
World. Okay.
Yeah. But primarily our biggest use case is really in the K-12 in education. And so mostly education, and most of that through K-12, and most of, we have some in university, and then there's sort of an ecosystem around that. You start with teams, a lot of clubs, sports teams are naturally kind of connected to schools.
So they can send each other messages like, we're having a practice.
Exactly.
I don't want to oversimplify it, but we're having a practice.
Simplicity is good. Yeah.
We have to get together, or this person's going to play this
right.
role.
Ride sharing, parents communicating,
okay.
right? Transportation, rained out game, practice schedule changes.
So just removing the logistics.
Yeah, it's about really real-time coordination.
Okay.
It's, I'm very proud of a use case here locally. The Office of Youth Violence Prevention, the City of Portland, they have a street-level outreach gang force, task force, and they probably have like around 50 people in a group, what we call a cell. And they use Celly to communicate, to mobilize in real time, to coordinate when they need to get resources at an area hotspot, or they might need to coordinate both for security safety, but also for resources. There might be housing needs. So what's important about building a network is being able to include different sort of stakeholders, and that would be, it might be, for example, the Portland Police Bureau, or it might be Multnomah County Department of Corrective Justice, or might be the street level outreach workers. But creating that cross domain communication is very important, especially for cross cutting issues like public safety. And so, or learning in general, right?
Right. Well, that's a great local example. The word cell in reference to a group, you know, I feel it has been stigmatized. It's been co-opted, you know, because when we think a cell, you know, all we've heard is a terrorist cell.
Yep.
And I love the idea of taking it back and having like soccer mom cell, you know, or baseball team cell.
Well, that's exactly our playbook. It's interesting. We've had many people comment on the use of the word cell in place of group. And well, the first,
because it would be really, groupy if you had chosen that.
The reason
that's
first
taken.
Of all, there's a few angles on it, but really, my wife is a biologist. First of all, or she's trained biologist, and so the notion of a biological cell originally it was really looked at like a little room, right? That's really the origin of the word cell came from.
Right.
So it's like a communication room, and then of course the name of our company is Celly, right? So it's just natural that we were kind of we uniquely had the opportunity to brand our groups as cells. And then third, Al-Qaeda, the notion of cell, one of the core aspects of our company is to being authentic. Authenticity is our core value. And, we want to take a social stand position on a lot of issues that we believe in. And, being bullied to the point where your whole language is sort of, trapped or frozen.
It's co-opted.
Exactly.
Stolen.
So
yeah.
We wanted to, we're a very small company, but to be able to, try to reclaim that word.
Yes.
In a positive way.
Yes.
And people think of prison cell and they think of, it's not going to work with kids in school, and they'll think of a cell. But, we've had encouraging feedback on it, as well as the obvious sort of like, this reminds you of Al-Qaeda or something, right? But at the same time, we've had people who very knowledgeable in the industry, people who like invested in Twitter to begin with, and they said the name you picked about a cell is exactly the right name that you should pick. So, it's our identity right now. That's
I think it's great. I think, reclaiming language that I'm going to just say the government hijacks is important, because that's how we communicate, is with language.
Right. Words are very important to us as a company.
You talk about authenticity being a core value, and that's kind of an intangible. So will you speak more to that in terms of, the values of your company?
Yeah, I was, from the, I've blogged about this actually, and a while ago too. So,
And where can people read your blog?
I have some Medium blog posts.
Okay.
And so, but, my co-founder and I, everyone at our company, when we hired them, the sort of the key message for them, the first message was to just, embrace, being authentic. And what that meant is up to you to define ultimately. And so it's about, figuring out that what it means to you ultimately.
Trying to be your genuine self.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's very important to us anyway. And then, being authentic for us means really putting your actions where your, where it results in rhetoric basically. So it means backing causes that we believe in, right? And so that would be
you mentioned social justice causes.
2011 Occupy, when it was going on there, okay, in a lot of ways we had a lot of over 300 different cells that were Occupy related, and we aggregated them so that you could communicate sort of, we built a website for them. And then on top of that, Occupy Wall Street, they were sort of our first customer in that they called us up and they wanted to have an interactive voice response way for people to join the Occupy networks.
What does that mean, interactive voice response?
You could dial up on a phone and with your voice opt in.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
To getting notices, messages.
And then it would also leave a voice message for you rather than just a text message going out, a voice message could go out.
So what Celly does is it has built the software. it's a software platform. It's not just an app.
Yes.
But it's a platform that allows platform. That. Okay, so continue. Mm-hmm. Occupy Wall
Street.
Yeah,
so anyway, Occupy Wall Street, there was a great quote from one of the organizers talking about when Zuccotti Park was kind of getting raided there. And they were mentioning how they used Sully to sort of marshal up the multitude. It went out to 5,000 people, and that helped sort of galvanize the action there. And so
now someone got your message on their phone. Could they send that to somebody else who could then opt in?
Oh, sure.
Does it work like that?
Yeah. Yeah. You can, it's very easy to opt in. You can opt in with a single text message.
Okay.
And so that's one of the reasons why groups can grow quickly and organically.
So how Occupy Wall Street, they were able to mobilize, or they were able to mobilize together, then they were able to quickly form
action groups
mm-hmm. in different areas really rapidly because of Sally. Yeah, or using that tool.
Among many other social networks.
Sure.
There's a heavy use of Twitter, heavy use of
right.
All social media. And now, we're a small part, but...
In Occupy Wall Street, and I don't know if this is true, but I remember hearing, so correct me, I'm going to just make air quotes, the authorities, made attempts to try to block people being able to receive messages or to block to be able to try to prevent them from coordinating when they could see how effective it was being.
I don't have knowledge of that.
Okay.
Another example of very recently use of Sully for social activism would be the Shell No PDX.
Okay.
They were messaging each other about that. There's a Shell No PDX
with
spell.
The kayak people and the people that went out, the danglers.
Right. Uh-huh. And then, before that in 2012, it would be when Hurricane Sandy hit, they were spontaneously... Occupy Sandy cells for volunteer hurricane relief effort, just coordinating people who needed to be rescued or water or goods services.
Wow.
And it's organic creation of group assembly. So organically, we call it emergent social networks. They just formed on the fly.
So the one thing we have, so what does it cost to use Sully?
Well, we follow what's called a freemium model. We provide service.
Freemium.
All these uh-huh. services I just talked about, or these use cases, largely free service. And we have more features when you want to manage many different cells together as sort of one domain of cells.
Okay.
Okay. And then we also have a premium service that allows you to white label, meaning white label means being able
it's
to
like put your own branding
exactly,
on
exactly put
something.
Your own branding on it rather than seeing the Sully brand. It's you're mm-hmm. able to have your own instance of what's behind Sully, and
so,
then label
so any
it as
activist
your own.
Group could use it for free, and they
yeah,
could
to get
they
started.
Could
mm-hmm.
you, they could use all the features that you've discussed so far. Mm-hmm. At absolutely no charge. So any group or any activist, anyone can start a group, a cell,
mm-hmm.
and is absolutely free to use.
Yeah, that's right. They start it, and then our hope, obviously, is to help. Hope it's a win-win, right? Where they
right.
grow large enough where they need maybe more than one cell and they want other features. Maybe
right.
they want to be... Maybe they want to take advantage of our new crowdfunding platform, right? To
where
raise
can,
money for
can,
their cause.
And mm-hmm. is that like one of those text something something to something and donate, or
okay,
is
well,
it like that?
We have that kind of simplicity, so it works across. It can work with we call it a cash tag, where you can just text the name of the group, the cell, with a dollar sign in front of it. Actually, it was a Stripe or Square. I can't remember which company came out with the notion of a cash tag.
Okay.
It was several months ago.
Very
but
clever.
We have our own sort of, uh-huh. take on that. But each one of our cells or groups has a name. But if you put a dollar sign in front of it, it can invoke. It comes back with a text message with a link to basically the mobile donation site. And so it's very...
So nonprofits could really use that.
Sure, it's designed for schools or nonprofits, right? We've just introduced it, but it's much like GoFundMe.
Sure,
the idea is really to, you know, communities of people, networks of people, and we have a lot of, for example, school groups, and you have parents that are part of those groups, and so the affinity that an existing community member has for the cause of a cell is very high, that affinity. And so we often hear that schools or learning organizations, they need crowdfunding, they need bootstrap, they need money, they need funding, right? So making that very easy.
Sad reality, right?
Yeah, KBOO probably needs funding, right?
It's just always sad to me that schools have to be, you know, essentially begging for money, you know, where we should, that should be our entire culture's highest priority,
having
an educated populace.
Well, that's really, when we talk about social change and we talk about our hashtag learn together, if you just look at Oregon, you know, where we live, you know, we have the lowest graduation rate, right?
Right.
In high schools, right? And then I think I was reading like 20% of the kids maybe miss 10%.
That's because they can't wait to retire.
Absenteeism. Yeah. So engagement, you know, simple engagement, communication, allowing students, teachers and parents to stay in communication so that they simply are aware and engaged and aware of events or homework, so parents are more engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, it's vital to maybe improving the learning outcomes and at least, you know, trying to up the graduation rate, and attendance is important.
Right. So. And if a student is, you know, part of that cell, mm-hmm. in essence, do you think that has the effect of, even though it's a very, it might be a little bit of a stretch, but it includes them in the conversation.
Exactly.
And gives them a somewhat of a voice.
It's so like you've read our marketing wrap, but yes, that's exactly.
Well, I didn't.
Okay. The one of the things I think I'm most proud of actually is that we get a lot of comments from teachers that say one of the sort of effects, and we didn't really know this going into it, was that the most sort of diffident or shy students would actually find their voice, right, through a Selly, right? Because they could interact in a way that was just more familiar or safer to them, right? That level of abstraction, right? Rather than maybe talking with their voice, communicating through a social media, private social media channel, was something that we got many tweets, comments about how it's really helped shy students find their voice. And so it's hard to quantify really the effect of that,
sure.
But you know, to be a, you know, to kind of to be bashful in school or to feel like you don't have, or classrooms can get dominated by different, you know, individuals with the loudest voice and most opinion.
Any group can be dominated by the most dominant most personality, whether it's at school or a club
Exactly.
or any organization, right?
Yeah, and so, and I kind of mentioned another use case. We have polling, so you can sort of dynamically send out a quick poll.
Like do a little survey.
Yeah, exactly.
A poll is like a little survey.
They call it an instant assessment.
So
schools.
Anyone could use Selly from Occupy Wall Street to a bowling league.
Yeah, exactly.
Government, schools, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. any yeah. group. And there's no charge for just setting
basic.
Up a basic, mm-hmm. air quotes, cell, mm-hmm. Which is just like having saying this is our group.
Yes.
This is our group, uh-huh. and we can intercommunicate. So besides sending messages, are there any other features of Selly?
Yeah.
Like are there calendars or I don't know.
We have, you can send file attachments. Like I said, mentioned you could have polls and surveys.
Okay.
Right. We have photo, right. And really one of the most unique aspects of what we do is you can connect one cell to another cell. So you can form sort of linkages between many different cells to create sort of federated networks. And it means that one cell can listen for particular messages in another cell and they'll automatically propagate. So
using keywords?
Yes, hashtags, keywords, okay. Right? And so it allows you to curate or filter whether...
So if you wanted to get all, you could say, I want to see everything just with an Occupy hashtag. And then all the Occupies would funnel through to you?
Yeah, that's basically the idea. The arrangement of it, like I mentioned this domain earlier of being a higher value service where you can sort of easily manage a domain of cells. That level of sort of ease of being able to set that kind of filtering up is really in our domain package. But individually, right now, you could take one cell. You and I could each have a cell, but we could agree on which hashtags, when there's a message with a particular tag in it, it'll propagate to you, or maybe you use a tag and it'll propagate to me. It can be bidirectional or one direction or one way.
Now, if it was being used for activism, then there's really nothing. And let's say they're police or mm-hmm. People who maybe didn't want the activism to occur, they could also be signed up on the cell and be getting the same notices. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly actually what
happened. It's not moderated.
Well, no, we do have a moderated mode.
Okay.
So moderation is a very important aspect of what we do. And so you compare what we do to like Twitter or to Facebook or the many other companies we compete against. We're a very small company.
There aren't any other companies besides those two, right? Kidding. Just kidding.
Well, we kind of discovered our whole premise of you're trying to understand why Facebook and why social media really wasn't appropriate or wasn't really taking off necessarily in schools and in classroom situations. And the problem was oversharing, the problems of privacy, the problems of potentially leaking your profile information out to literally billions of people.
Right.
And so one of the aspects is very important in not only schools, but to prevent, really for the growth, to make a group scale in size. If you start with just like three people, an open chat is pretty effective. You could anyone can send a message, it'll go to the other two, right? But if you get, let's say, 3,000 people, you start doing that, it becomes a chat storm. Right.
Right. And then it has no value. The content yes. has no value.
Right. And so right. the role of, so we've realized that, or people have informed us that per message moderation is very important. And so a message can come in, it can first be seen by one or more what we call curators, and then they can effectively see the message and approve it and effectively forward it on to the rest of the group, or they can interact directly with the sender.
Okay.
And so they can sort of clarify the conversation, and then they can clean it up and then send it out. And so this model of per message curated chat is very important for graceful scale up of a group, of the size of a group. And it works very well for, well, even like Portland Public Schools is a silly customer. And they send out inclement weather alerts, but inevitably somebody might, at least in a lot of school scenarios, a parent might receive a message and they want to send a message back, right? If it's right. purely just one way, the communication, then you would never see that message. A parent might send a question back saying, hey, they might say no buses today, or buses running late today, right? And they might say, well, where's the pickup or something, right? There might be a clarifying question
sure.
coming back. And so you wouldn't want that to go to everybody. You want it to go to the administrators,
okay.
and then they can clarify it and send out another message to everybody else. And so that sort of protocol or that sort of communication is important for streamlining the conversation, especially when you have a lot of people. And so it's a sort of a key, and it works well for, like I said, district-wide school communication, or it could work well for organizing and activism.
Well, we're going to talk more about activism after the break. I'm Rabia Yeaman with The Digital Divide. Today, I'm joined by Russell Okamoto, co-founder and CEO of Celly, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Yes. Yes.
bell, this calling, this burden, this falling, the world turning. This what I thought I knew, this what I thought was true, this I understood, this in the deep wood, this ah, there I stood, a child so fair. This on a certain square, this down the dirty stairs, this to see the table set, this with golden chairs, this ah, to follow, 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 follow.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Digital Divide. I'm Rabia Yeaman, and I am talking today with Russell Okamoto, co-founder and CEO of Selly, a software application that allows people to form groups and allows them to communicate and share information. And during our break, we were talking and one of the things that we were talking about was, you know, like building social change and building movements using technology, and that your company has, that's like a vision.
Yes.
But it's not the first vision that you've had of that, because I looked at your bio on LinkedIn, and here's what I read. Citizen journalism, where neighbors report on local news and shared information about local businesses. And this says predating Facebook, predating Twitter, predating Foursquare. Public press was a novel and fun project where we managed to involve communities worldwide to share news and information. Tell us more about this public press in your past.
That's very interesting, very timely, because last Saturday there was a Journalism That Matters conference at JTM conference at the down on Cooch at the University of Oregon building there. And so Journalism That Matters is basically a gathering of student journalists, of professional journalists, of technologists also, really a lot of different types of people. But I had met them actually, I think in 2006, and even before that they'd been going on, but they have this conference every year, and they talk about the state of journalism and how, what's the path forward. And one of the organizers knew that I lived in Portland, and so he invited me to the conference, so I went there on Saturday. So I hadn't really thought about public press and what was at the time, back really in 2000, is when my co-founder and I, so 15 years ago.
Okay, so 15 years ago, you developed something. So tell us about Public Press.
Okay, 15 years ago, we developed what we called Public Press. My co-founder, my current Sully co-founder, Greg Passmore. And Public Press was the moniker for it was newspaper of the 21st century. And it really was about creating crowdfunded journalism so that really every role in the news delivery value chain from the source, the news stringer at the edge, the reporter, the editor, the copy editor, the fact checker, really the aggregator, and even the reviewer and the reader, they were linked up in this what we call the collaborative journalism process. Each person could play that particular role and then contribute to really ultimately measure the fairness, accuracy, the credibility of an article, and then to effectively rate the quality of an article and rate the quality of the participant. And so like review of a reviewer, right? Much like how you see on Amazon now, the collaborative filtering aspects. So the vision way back in 2000, at the time, this was called civic journalism, not citizen journalism. But our ambition to create effectively, again, a social network, a news network that would create, really deliver high quality journalism that was crowdsourced was something that was we're still very passionate about. And you could see a lot of what we do with Sully right now really came from those experiments. And even the use of text messaging was really in Sully was really born from the engendered from our use cases in Public Press, because at the time this was before you look at the Public Press manifesto we had, and there's no mention of the word mobile app, and it just talks about text messaging as really the vanguard mobile client edge and the mobile client channel that people would use, that and then the website. And so we invested heavily in building a service that could be utilized both for the creation and the consumption of news through a very thin text messaging channel. And so,
do you think it was a little ahead of its time?
Yeah, this is actually before Twitter when we did this. So, yeah, definitely.
So it was like a much smaller niche of people at that time period who would have kind of like bought in or embraced it.
Right. I think so. And I think
that people didn't have access to as much technology then. That was, say, 2000?
Yes, 2000, 15
years
ago.
So mm-hmm. that was really forward thinking, but maybe it just wasn't like the audience that you have now.
Yeah, that's true. And the technology and the ubiquity, the whole social networking movement has really made a profound impact on journalism. I would say that really what hasn't changed is that really still is the fundamental problem that has not been solved yet after 15 years. So,
and that problem is?
Well, that problem to me is basically the ownership of media and the ownership, the ability to manufacture public opinion by a few people or a few companies, corporations. And there's obviously major media consolidation that's happened in the last 15 years.
As a radio station, TV. I think we're painfully, painfully aware.
Yeah,
and as a listener-supported radio station that gets no government funding and no major corporate funding because our values for who we accept funds from is very narrow in terms of the values that they have to comply with.
Yes,
so.
It's exactly right. So the TV, radio, that kind of broadcasting, advertisement, billboards. But what has changed dramatically, I think, in the last 15 years regarding sort of journalism and ownership of public opinion is there's been tremendous social media, really, corporations that, and these are the massive companies, right? Facebook, right? Google, Twitter, right?
Yes.
There's a whole industry now that's developed around providing services really for free, right? But if you look at the cost, really the and look at what it's costing you, if you look carefully, I think there's a privacy aspect that's being that's sort of implicit in that transaction. The whole cliche is that if a product's free, then you are the product, and so there's a whole industry. I'm not a real expert. There are experts in this whole area, and from Pando Daily writers to really media pundits, academics, but mm-hmm. they blog about very articulate ways about for-profit surveillance and how companies are giving away products, but they surveil, they watch everything you write,
like,
and
collecting
they track you.
Everything.
Yeah, we really has turned the cell phone into a tracking device where it tracks your basically wherever you go, your likes, right? Your retweets, all with the purpose of really targeting you.
Well, it's really interesting because I had told you before we got started today that I just wanted to mention, I like dying to mention in that Edward Snowden, because we've been tracking the saga on this program, over the months and now year, that he had just a couple weeks ago gotten onto Twitter, and he's still in Russia, mm-hmm. but now he's tweeting. And it's like now he's regained his voice. He's not as isolated. I'm disappointed to hear that he wants to come back and he's willing to go to prison. It makes me sad to hear that, because I don't think he's done anything wrong. I don't think, there's probably some things he did that were, but what he did, the benefits were far greater, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Uh-huh. Of his actions were far greater in changing laws and changing how countries, have changing their privacy mm-hmm. Laws and practices and policies. So, so he just is on Twitter now.
Yes,
which is a big deal.
Yeah.
So social media, right? But we every time you log in to something, every time you create a profile. Now, how is it with Sully when people set that up?
We don't. I mean, our whole revenue model is not based on advertisement, based on tracking or selling your profile or any kind of information. I mean, if you just look at massive companies, they're giving away email for free, or
right.
their networks for free, right? But there's a cost, and they're watching.
It's a trade. You're trading.
Right? And obviously, there's complicity, right, with national security that has happened at the
yes.
corporate level. And
absolutely, so AT&T.
Yeah, or a lot of companies that have called for sort of watchdog groups to watch the NSA or things like that. And so it's ironic.
But Google just announced they're going to be encrypting all their email, all of our email, that our Gmail. And the White House has just announced that. It was a benevolent announcement, but that they were not, the White House announced that they were not going to force Google to decrypt their emails, which sound very benevolent of them, but that sounds like spin to me.
Yeah, I mean, Google has, obviously been a vital, incredible company, and it's a matter of convenience, right? People are, what we do, if it's convenient, right, people are apt to do it, rather, even if it impinges upon their privacy. And so, people use Gmail, but
conscious trade-offs. We make conscious trade-offs.
Or unconscious, I think, actually.
Well, that could be, or even ignorant, we're using a tool and maybe we're not thinking that, everything I search for and everything I type is being, put in, except for the and, ifs, and buts,
right.
is being put into a database as
right.
keywords that are connected ultimately to my profile.
Yeah, and then you have your cell phone in your pocket. You're walking around. It's like a Trojan
right.
horse.
Right, where's Waldo?
Yeah, it's for Minority Report, like targeting of ads.
That's one of my favorite movies that I reference frequently with the old Minority Report. I think in many ways we're actually there in terms that we do have apps or social security at a high level where iris recognition is used, facial recognition. That's a large part of the premise behind Minority Report. That and of course arresting people before they can commit a crime that the algorithm has determined they're likely to commit.
Right, precog.
A scary world.
Yeah. So, the technology obviously is really powerful. All of it, the cell phones, we're going into VR now, right? And but back to the journalism aspect, the funding models for change, if it's ad driven and if it's about watching people sort of surreptitiously and then targeting them, I hope there's better ways of providing like journalism or news, right?
We certainly can't depend on television to provide that. I don't even think they use fact checkers anymore. It seems like they either are inventing content, Fox News, or they're just essentially repeating press releases or news releases that they get directly from the government. It doesn't seem to be any investigative journalism really happening unless it's an unsolved crime.
Right. Investigative journalism is very expensive, right? It costs a lot to do. And so
we shouldn't call it journalism at all then.
Yeah, a good example. Just if you look, juxtapose the coverage CNN in the first Persian Gulf War, right? It was incredible in that it was really video coverage. It was amazing, and
it was compelling,
very much so,
addictively.
Because
it was real.
And the technology was an amazing evolution there. But you compare that to the clickbait. Right. A lot of journalism sites now, and it's that progression, that devolution, right? That de-evolution.
We need to find clickbait for our listeners that might not really
something
know
that looks
means.
Enticing. If it bleeds, it leads type headline, and you have to click it to actually see it.
Like the most amazing, horrific image you'll ever see, and then it's a diet drink.
Yeah, or the lists, the top 10 ways of something, list-based.
The lists.
Yeah, that's just a lot of aspects, but that's a... yeah, that aspect. But so back to journalism and public press, our whole our view is an optimistic one, that we could maybe sort of invert the news media by providing a bottom-up approach. Uh-huh. Right, allowing it to be
and empowering anybody, empowering exactly. citizens, right. or actual journalists,
exactly,
to have a, right. a vehicle, is right. it like a vehicle?
Exactly, and the challenge is maintaining credibility, right? Allowing you to run it through a process that creates credibility. You kind of do that informally right now by looking at the number of followers or the number of retweets something like that. So it's very informal. But
who else thinks this is important?
Yeah, exactly. And so there are informal social cues. But to be able to do it in a formal way would enable monetization, right? A really sort of micro-monetization model that hopefully would propel the whole system forward. And so I think there's still a huge gap for that. There's huge, that problem's still quite unsolved.
Has Selly expanded, it sounds like education is a large... user or adopter of Selly in Oregon. Has Selly expanded with educational institutions beyond the state of Oregon?
Oh, yes, nationally, right. All 50 states, even outside of Oregon. We get a lot of requests to run services in, Africa, India, a lot of different countries. My co-founder is actually, South African. I mean, they had an HIV awareness project down there, and where our service didn't run down in South Africa, but
it's because they didn't have internet. or well, sell they just, service?
Well, we didn't. No, no. We don't provide service. We weren't providing service in South Africa, but this...
Because for a lot of people all over the world, their cell phone, and I'm not talking about a smartphone. I'm talking maybe like a flip phone or something.
Right.
For a lot of people in the world, that... they don't have a computer sitting on their desk or a desk, but they may have a cell phone, and that's where they get their email and do all of their communications.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So I think that a lot of people in the United States don't understand that for a huge hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people all over the world, their little modest cell phone is their email tool and is their main communication device. It's their computer.
Exactly. Dr. Zilat Bordas approached us, and this was July of 2013, and they wanted to run an HIV awareness campaign to help the people sort of combat the stigma of having HIV in South Africa there. And so Greg and I spent our 4th of July that year enabling service, and we finally sent messages for them in South Africa for these campaigns on 4th of July on that 2013. And so
that sounds like a great way to spend
it. It was exactly
A meaningful 4th of July. And of course we know, or maybe you don't know, but you know, Facebook does have an active program where they have a satellite up, and they're trying to bring free internet to parts of the world, especially in Africa, where they don't have access to any way to connect. Mm-hmm. So they are using some funds to a lot, because putting a satellite, you know, up in the air is no small thing to bring, you know, connectivity to people. So that seems like a great marriage.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, these huge Silicon Valley, right? All the very successful, the whole software, the whole industry, the tech industry, obviously they can be leaders and are leaders, I think, in social change. And so we're just one small part of that, right? And we're
I think the Snowden revelations forced some of those companies to decide which side of the line they wanted to stand on, because their transgressions were made public.
Yeah, and hopefully people noticed, right? A lot of people, I don't think, noticed.
Most people aren't as focused on these
time
things
has
as
a way
we
of,
might be.
People forgetting, right? Definitely. Right. So,
well, how can people, like, let's say that you have a group. Mm-hmm. You have an activist group, or not even an activist group, any kind of group, and you want to get on Celly and get the members of your group connected so they're using that tool. How would someone go about that?
Well, the easiest way is for them to either download the Celly app or go to the website, and then with a few clicks, they can start their own cell, their own group, and then anybody can join it. Because they know the group name, or depending on how it's set up, it can be public or private. But then to onboard or to register,
so you have a private group that only the invited members can see.
Yeah, you can invite people explicitly, or you can just ask people to text the name of your group, and then you get onboarded. You get registered on the fly like that, and so it's very fast.
But you could also log in and see if there are any public groups that you might be interested following.
Yes, we have we have public cells, and we have sort of a directory of allowing you to discover cells based on hashtag, but on topic, right? And so you can even, it's an advanced feature that not a lot of people know about. You can broadcast the location, sort of beacon out the location. A cell has a geolocation with it, so you can effectively...
Or you can say, I'm over here, and
it will show on
a map?
No, you broadcast, and then if you're nearby another cell, it will let you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or you could be in a location, like KBOO.
Another cell or a cell member?
Another cell. You basically...
Well, it's all members.
It'll
right?
use Wi-Fi, GPS, right? Peer-to-peer to triangulate, find out what are some existing cells nearby, right? And if there wasn't one nearby, like I could turn it on right now and it would might see KBOO as a location, and you could push a button and then create a cell for KBOO.
Oh, I see.
Right. And so if somebody's walking by, right? They could see, oh, the KABU's broadcasting their cell, right?
Now, that group would be really interesting, to just spend a day with my phone, just kind of walking around, seeing where there were cells.
Yeah, that's ambient town conversations, right? To be able to start them organically, quickly. So we have that capability. There's a whole bootstrap chicken and egg problem, right? If there aren't any, you're not going to do it. But right, if they're all around, then yes, it'll be very... The
we
conversation
have a pretty vibrant activist community.
Yeah. So go out there and create those... create those cells, definitely.
I would think that in Portland there wouldn't be any shortage of them, considering how active people are.
Well, that particular feature isn't widely known right now, but it's right in the app, and that ability to create hyperlocal cells. I mean, again, back to public press, it's about hyperlocal conversation, right? Being able to get people to talk about venues and have chat about it, kind of like Foursquare, right?
Right.
Be able to talk about and dynamically to create conversation groups about a venue when you're at the venue or passing by the venue.
Well, tell us about, where's the website where people can go to learn more?
Okay, it's a cel.ly.
CEL.ly. That's a period,
yeah,
L-Y.
Exactly.
So not the word dot. So it's not, it's not one word, it's CEL.ly.
Yeah, instead of .com, it's .ly.
There you go.
And it's a, and there's a story behind why we have that too.
We've got 2 minutes.
Okay, so again, when you do text messaging, right, the character limits are very important. And so it saved a few characters, right? When you're seeing a text message that has CEL.ly in it versus CELLY.com.
Okay.
So, and you know, again, this was a time when, you know, you could get those kinds of short domain names too. So everything is tuned. Even our text messaging short code is 23559. A text messaging short code is a 5-digit phone number that's central to our service. So when you interact with Sully, you need to interact with 23559 if you do it through text messaging. But that 23559 maps to CELLY.
Okay.
Alphanumerically. So.
Well, so go check it out. If you have a group or organization, you're part of a school, and you want you're looking for a tool that will allow you to communicate with your members quickly and through not just one medium, but email, SMS, text, the app. Desktop, mm-hmm. The app. Check out Sully, CEL.ly. Russell, thank you so much for finding time to stop in and
thank you very much
today.
Yeah, we're very grateful. Thank you.
You'll be able to get archive of this program at kboo.fm in a day or two. You can go there right now and click donate if you support independent community media. Coming up next, moving on, we'll talk to you again next month, second Friday of every month, on the Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. Thanks for listening.
Oh, it's just another day. Just another day. It's just another day on earth. Oh, it's just another day on earth. It's just another day.
KABU Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KABU embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We have been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KABU Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kabu.fm/planRFP2015.
This Saturday on Swingin' Country, we will take a trip to the country with Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler's had a busy career, starting out with the hugely successful rock band Dire Straits. He has branched out to producing other artists, composing film scores, and playing guitar for the likes of Bob Dylan, George Jones, and Randy Newman. Mark also recorded duet albums with Chet Atkins and Emmylou Harris. Also, Jonathan Trawick from the swing band Well Swung will be in studio to play live. So tune in to KBOO Saturday morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. as we take a trip to the country with Mark Knopfler and Jonathan Trawick.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 12 p.m. Coming up next on the Mighty 90.7, it's Moving On with your host, the one and only, the inimitable, and isn't she just such a gal, Lori Sonnenfeld. So keep it locked right here on KBOO Portland, your community radio.
You might not hear me, but I keep calling out your name. No, you might not hear me.